Remarks of the President, Lawrence, Massachusetts, 17 October 1952.
The President of the United States.
Thank you very, very much. Thank you. I can't tell you how very much I appreciate that most cordial welcome. I don't think I've ever seen so many people in one place in my life. And I've been a good many places where there have been big crowds. Now, I suppose all of you understand that I'm no longer a candidate for office. Back in March 1952, I announced to the world that I expected to retire from the presidential office on January 20th. Now, I'm not campaigning for myself. I'm campaigning for the Democratic Party, to which I owe everything I've ever had politically. I've had all that I can ask from the American people and the Democratic Party. I'm not asking for votes for myself, but I'm asking you to vote the Democratic ticket, which in my opinion is the party that can do most for the country in the next 4 years. I'm asking you to vote for the Democratic candidates in this state, for young Jack Kennedy for the Senate, for Tom Lane for the House of Representatives, and for my good friend Paul Dever for governor. I'm also asking you, as earnestly as I know how, to vote for the Democratic nominees for President and Vice President, Adlai Stevenson and John Sparkman. These two men are two of the best candidates that the Democratic Party has ever offered to the American people. Adlai Stevenson will, I'm sure, make a great president, an honest, courageous, and wise president who will stand on the side of the people. I believe this election is one of the most critical that this country has ever faced. My conviction on this point has grown stronger as the campaign progressed. I'm deeply alarmed at the position the Republican Party has assumed and the pledges and promises they have made. On the domestic front, it is clear that the Republican Party is dominated by its most reactionary wing, running on the most reactionary platform it has had in recent history. What I want to talk to you about, however, is not the threat which the Republican Party presents to our domestic economy, which certainly is bad enough, but I want to spell out the danger which a Republican victory would mean in our fight against communism. I do not think I have to explain to you that the peace of the world and the future of our civilization are greatly menaced by Soviet communism. You know as well as I do what this godless creed would do to us if it achieved world domination. Before an audience in Massachusetts, I do not have to justify the efforts that this government is making to curb that menace. And I do not have to apologize for what that effort is costing you. You know too well the value of what is at stake in this struggle. Since the end of the war, we have built a gigantic framework of international security against this terrible Soviet threat. We've been determined that Soviet conquest would not absorb the peoples of Europe. Europe is not only essential to our military security. It is also the land of our origins. We know that the people there have faith in God. We know that they have faith in freedom and that they deserve our help against the menace that overshadows them. We've given that help and we have changed the whole situation. In 1946, the way lay open to communist subversion and aggression all across Western Europe. Today, those gates are closed. As a result of our aid, the European nations stand firm in the determination to resist the establishment of communism. In the Far East, we have helped to create and strengthen a ring of new independent nations from India to Japan. We have helped 600 million people to make their way from colonial subjection to dependency on independent self-government. Baffled in Europe, the masters of the Kremlin redoubled their efforts in Asia. They dared to do there what they were afraid to do in Europe. Their puppet armies crossed an international boundary in an effort to gobble up an independent country. This was the first step in a process that meant World War III if it was not stopped. We met this threat. If we had not stopped aggression, I'm just as sure as I stand here the Soviets would have marched over Europe. We stopped aggression in its tracks and drove it back. This has cost us much in resources and money and in brave lives, but we have held firm, and behind the shield of our defense, the free nations have been growing in power and determination to resist further communist advances. This whole program of resisting communist aggression from Germany around the world to Japan has been created by this democratic administration. It has also had the support of a number of decent Republicans. We have welcomed that support, but it has had the continuing and bitter opposition of the men who now lead and control the Republican Party and who dominate the Republican Congress, Republicans in Congress. Despite the Republican opposition, we have put our program into effect, and it has brought the communist drive to a standstill. This bitter opposition comes from the isolationist wing of the Republican Party, and this wing is composed of men who are as blind to the real significance of the communist threat as they are to the as they were to the threat of Hitler. They are the same men who thought we could do business with Hitler before the war. You may remember how they wanted to abolish the draft just a few weeks before Pearl Harbor. To these men, the danger of communism and the security of the country are dim and distant concepts. What books large in their view of world affairs is their pocketbooks and the pocketbook of their friends and followers. They are against communism if it doesn't cost much to be against it. They are in favor of defense only if it doesn't mean high taxes. For years, these isolationists were kept in the background by the integrity and the force of character of Senator Vandenberg. When he died, they emerged again and sought to control the Republican Party. Their great effort was made at the Republican Convention this year, and everyone thought they had been defeated. But now we find the Republican candidate for president accepting and adopting their arguments and making the same attacks on our foreign policy that they have been making for years. The liberal Republicans lost the nomination, and the old guard Republicans captured that nomination, and they also captured the nominee. There is real danger in this, my friends, a grave and terrible danger. And I'd like to explain to you just what it is, if you're interested, and I know you are, because it affects you right down to home. The policy of the isolationist is the policy of appeasement. Of course, they do not use that word. They do not even admit it to themselves. But that's what their recommendations add up to. They do not say, let America stay weak while the Soviet Empire grows strong. But they recommend that we cut back our defense program. They recommend tax cuts and budget cuts which would weaken our Army and Navy and Air Force, and this amounts to appeasement. They do not say, let's abandon our allies and let them sink, but they try to cut down our programs for making our allies strong enough to stand on their own feet and resist communist aggression. And that amounts to appeasement. They do not say, let the Soviet communism overrun and conquer any little country that can't preserve its freedom by its own efforts. But they do say, let Europeans fight Europeans. Let Asians fight Asians. They do say, we ought to keep our armed forces at home, and that amounts to appeasement. Now let's get this matter straight. Our firm policy is to make the free nations strong enough to defend themselves. But as the world is today, many of these countries simply cannot protect themselves against communism without the help of our armed forces. Either we let the Soviet Empire gobble up these countries, or we send our forces in to aid in their defense and fight if need be. The choice is that simple. It's a choice between resisting communist aggression and appeasing it. And the road of appeasement leads to bitter defeat. We all know that. Now, these isolationist policies have been thrashed over in public debate in this country for some years past. The American people know them for what they are, either a foolish delusion or a cheap way of trying to get votes. Now, toward the end of this campaign, the Republican candidate for president appears to have adopted them. Now, he knows better. That's what makes me sad. He knows better. He's been a part of the program by which we've been holding these communists back, and he knows better. He's worked to build up our national security here and abroad. He knows, or ought to know, the danger we face. In fact, he's told me what the danger we face is time and time again. But he appears to be willing to undermine our safety if that will get him elected president. Look at the positions he has taken. He's urged that we cut our defense spending. He's urged that we cut taxes. He's sneered at our specific programs of military and economic aid to Europe. And now in recent days, he is apparently suggesting that we pull our troops out of Korea and let the South Koreans do all the fighting. I want to give you some facts about this last proposal. I have never seen anything cheaper in politics. We cannot do what he suggests without appeasing communism in Korea, and he knows it. Of course, every one of us would like to be able to bring the boys back home. Nothing weighs more heavily on our minds and hearts than the sacrifices and the casualties of our forces are suffering there. If I could order them home without endangering our country, without imperiling our homes, I assure you I would do it. But it cannot be done, and I cannot do it. And neither can the Republican candidate for president, and he knows it. Now, the Republican candidate for president Now, the Republican candidate for president is talking as if he had a new idea in the training of South Koreans to do the fighting in Korea. This, my friends, is just a shameless pretense. He knows that one of the major features of our policy in Korea and one of the major achievements of our armed forces there during the last 18 months has been the creation and training of a strong Korean ground army. This is one of the greatest benefits we have obtained during the lull in the fighting that resulted from the truce talks. The truce talks which the Republican candidate has cheaply and falsely called a bear trap. The United States is now supporting the Republic of Korea military forces totaling approximately 400,000 men. Our training schools are turning out 14,000 South Korean soldiers each month. There are 50% more Korean troops in the battle lines today than there are Americans. But the kept press in this country has never told you that. The creation of these large and capable forces is the result of our intensive training program. This program is going ahead as fast as General Mark Clark and General Van Fleet can make it go. It takes a long time to make good officers. It takes a good while to train men to handle modern weapons and to service them. But we are making excellent progress. The Koreans want to defend their own country. They have shown that they are capable of fighting bravely and well. Anybody who has read the newspaper headlines the last few days, instead of the speeches of the Republican candidate, has seen how the South Koreans have met and turned back a new communist offensive. But we have to give them more than rifles and uniforms if they are to win victory. It's sheer demagoguery to assert otherwise. Today, the South Koreans are facing not only the North Koreans, but the Chinese Communist armies. And behind those communist armies are the vast supplies, weapons of war, and skilled technicians of the Soviet Union itself. If we mean to hold Korea, if we mean to hold the line there against international aggression, there must be no loose talk now about pulling our soldiers out. As a result of the training of the South Koreans, we have been able to give our men less duty at the front and to carry out a rotation policy for our soldiers. Ultimately, it is our objective to have a Korean Republic completely able to defend itself. But this will not be possible so long as the offensive power of the communist conspiracy is concentrated on South Korea. Now these, my friends, are hard military facts. And of all the people, the Republican candidate for president ought to know them. Yet in a speech after speech, he leaves the impression that if he is elected, he will majestically let the Koreans take over all the fighting and bring our boys home, while he is on the back platform of his train holding out this glowing hope. His staff are in the press car pointing out to the reporters that he has not said when he will be able to do this. And he knows very well he can't do it without surrendering Korea until the present Korean conflict is at an end, and he knows that better than anybody. But he doesn't mind leading the people to think he can do it as soon as he is elected. He said that he knows the remedy for Korea. Well, now, my friends, I made him chief of staff of the United States Army. I put him in command of the NATO troops in Europe. He has been my military advisor officially ever since World War II was over. And if he had information which would be valuable to me in helping to wind up the Korean business, he ought to give it to me, and let's do it now and save a lot of lives and not wait. And not do a lot of demagoguery and say that he can do it after he's elected. If he can do it after he's elected, we can do it now. My friends, the great danger of these false promises, the great danger of all these isolation attacks on our foreign policy, is that they give aid and comfort to the communists. The communists want us to cut down our defense effort. They want us to pull out of Korea. They want us to go soft and take it easy. They are hoping that we'll get tired of the effort we're making, that we will become impatient with our allies, that we will slow down the creation of a strong defense in Europe and give up in Asia. That is their strategy for us. That's the communist strategy for us. That's their real bear trap the Republicans are likely to lead us into. The Soviet foreign minister got off the boat in New York a few days ago. Listen to this carefully now. This is the Soviet foreign minister. He was asked whether he agreed with the proposal of the Republican candidate for president that we should withdraw our troops from Korea. He replied that he agreed with the proposal that the United States troops should be withdrawn from Korea. He said we should not have been there in the first place. Oh, naturally, That has long been the communist line. In the strains and stresses of our election year, there is danger we may make decisions which conform to the Soviet strategy for our destruction. That's why I say, my friends, that this is a most critical election. The only sure defense of this country, the only sure path to peace, is the policy of firm resistance to communism which we have been following. A policy of avoiding another great war on the one hand and of avoiding appeasement on the other. This is a very hard and difficult path to follow, my friends. There are no shortcuts, no easy way in the present situation to meet what we're faced with. We've already achieved great gains through following this policy. We've already saved our civilization from disaster that seemed almost inevitable a few years ago. But bear this in mind. We are still in danger. We cannot expect to win easily in this struggle against forces so menacing and so evil that they seem like the forces of Antichrist. In this election, we should choose the man and the party who see our danger clearly and face it with courage and discrimination. We should choose the candidate who is not afraid to talk about it frankly to all the people. And we should choose that candidate on the basis of what's best for this great republic, the greatest in the history of the world. The presidency is the most powerful office that's ever existed in the history of the world. You must have a man in that office who has a level head, who is not a demagogue, who thinks of the people first and who thinks of the welfare of this great country, who thinks of saving the free world from communism. And if you think of these things as you should and use your head in your own interest and in the interest of this great nation of ours, you'll elect Adlai Stevenson, President of the United States, and we'll have 4 good years.